body feels. Everyone needs.
Start recording and then I can edit as much as we want. Are you ready?
I don't have a whole lot this week, so hopefully you've got a, I got a few things, but hasn't been the most exciting week.
Yeah, me too. I've got a couple of things and I'll talk a little bit about my book.
Well, that's a good thing. Going up a Kickstarter soon, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to bother with a physical version because postage and import tax and customs clearance and all of that bullshit is so complicated. There is no one. I have been searching the last 2 days online trying to go, okay, I just want a quote on how much it'll cost for me to ship this to so that I can get it home. How much would that be? It's like, oh, well, that depends on blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, just give me a ballpark. And you know, like going to AusPost website for kind of the guidelines of international shipping, it says prohibited items. And on that list, it's got as one of the bullet points, printed books, magazines, pictures, hyphen, essentially, I can't remember exactly the wording, but it's sort of like obscene in nature. And it's like, so does that mean pictures that are obscene in nature or any printed books that are obscene in nature?
Surely it must mean a whole lot that's obscene in nature. You can send books overseas.
Yeah, it seems stupid that they don't just kind of just go, obscenity, no. But it, the way that they put it is like, okay, are printed books prohibited? In which case, that's bollocks. Sure.
In case I'm wearing the right t-shirt tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to show up quickly. I got my tax return the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And I decided to splurge a little bit on a new toy.
Mm. Oh. Okay.
Tried out yet, but I thought it'd be something interesting to try.
Yeah, because that's the one that's essentially all wire free, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, you don't even need to plug into a computer or a phone or anything. So.
Nice.
I found out there's a simulator you can download. I don't know how widely available, but you can fire people. They've got a virtual reality person they've created who you can fire over and over again. It's supposed to be a training tool. Do they know? I enjoy it.
All right. Well, let's start the show. Yeah, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 47 of Armchair Producers. I am one of your hosts, George Tarrant, alongside the man, the myth, the legendary 1984, Mr. Travis Croft. How are you, sir?
I am fine and dandy. I am still gainfully employed, unlike some people we were just discussing. I am not trying to ship obscenities overseas like some other people out there.
Not shipping obscenity. I am merely saying take a piss on Jesus' grave. No, I'm not. That's in another book.
And if you were... There was a guy in the 90s called... It was an artist in the 90s who had a photo, I think it was, but they displayed here in Melbourne. It was called Piss Christ. It's a thing. You can Google this. And he had, it was a crucifix submerged in urine. So okay. It was a fairly literal title of her thing.
Yep.
It was very, very controversial. Someone actually attacked it in the art gallery with a hammer or something.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. And... Yeah, that's Jesus on the cross, surrounded in pee.
That's says what it does in the box, right?
Yeah, there
I think
is
the artist no false advertising or something like that. But it was very controversial, but obviously here in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's
so. But I would recommend not putting that on the cover of your book. That would be my professional advice.
Fear not, I will not be doing that. I will be doing it. You know what? People have seen the front cover of my book already. It's out there on social media.
So those are uninitiated who aren't aware what the hell we're talking about, hello to the Russian bots. We are talking, of course, about the long-awaited release.
Yeah.
Of George's book.
Yeah. Yeah. The long gestating Vaughn.
It Vaughn. Because it was Volition for a while, wasn't it?
No, that's the sequel.
Ooh, I just dropped a major spoiler here, people. There's going to be a sequel being greenlit by George already.
Yeah, it's already happening, people. You've got to think franchise from day one.
Shared universe.
ironically, yes, all of my stuff is a shared universe.
His book's been in the works since I knew you. It's got to be 6 or 7 years in here in Australia, and probably I think you'd started it well before that.
Well, as a book, as a traditional novel?
No, it was a comic book first. It was a screenplay, a comic book, novel.
It was going to be a 15-minute short film for my acting school. So that tells you how long this idea has been in my brain. Since about 2004, I think. So that's, you know, 15 years.
Hey, look, how long did it take Ryan Reynolds to get the proper Deadpool film off the ground? It got to be at least 15 years, eh?
Yeah, that's fair. And how long did it take Jim Cameron to make Avatar? And
it's taken him fucking 10 years to make a second one after it was the highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah,
that's, you know, I mean, you had a bit of a leg up on you getting your book published. So,
yeah,
you know.
I'm okay. But yeah, it's gone through short film to feature length to graphic novel to book.
So, and we finally will be launching on Kickstarter in the next week or two?
As long as everything goes according to plan, which it should, because I'm not doing a physical release. I highly doubt I'm doing a physical release unless it's monumentally successful, because import tax, customs clearance, and all of that shit, it is so damn confusing. And I could go through a fulfillment center, which definitely financially more successful idea, but you have to kind of, it's only worthwhile if you know you're going to ship 300, 400, 500 copies. And it's like, I can't imagine 500 people wanting my book. That'd be lovely. But
yeah, you're lucky. Somebody interesting to retweet it.
Yeah. I just, you know, if I get 10 people to retweet to 10 other people, I might get 5 people.
True. Maybe you need to tweet our mate Donald. You know,
I am not having
this book released. Sad.
But it's got to be essentially a digital release. There's going to be an ebook. There's going to be an audio book. There's also, for whichever tier you register on, you can also get a digital comic of what it was originally going to look like. And it's quite an interesting time capsule thing, because the story has changed a lot. The opening of it has changed quite a bit in particular. So you'll get this comic and it's like, okay, I recognize these characters, but that whole opening sequence is entirely different, and all sorts of bits and pieces have changed. So it's kind of fun.
Ladies and gentlemen and Russian bots, I did try very, very hard to convince George to put a rewards tier in, where if you lived locally, he would come to your house and eat breakfast. I suspect I've been unsuccessful, but you can't say I didn't try to give you the opportunity to have this man come over and cook you some kangaroo steak for breakfast.
I'm not doing kangaroo steaks for breakfast. That's afternoon tea.
Savage.
With lovely kangaroo Russian caravan.
Kangaroo sausages for breakfast. What am I talking about?
That's better.
Black pudding?
Of course. Come on, I'm British.
Well, full English. I'll be backing it, of course, at the highest tier I can, because I just want to say I was on board when the film comes out. I can.
This is quite an impressive feat, ladies and gentlemen, because every week Travis and I do this babbling bullshit of a podcast for an hour and a half, and he is willing the highest tier. At the moment, it's going to have everything, including, at the moment, it's looking between 25 to 28 hour audiobook, and he wants 28 hours of my voice injected into his brain That's dedication, people.
Oh, I just play it to keep people from hanging around at the front of my building, right? Like those skeezy teenagers. Who's going to hang around and listen to that for 28 hours? It's like when they play Barry Manilow at the train station.
Maybe that's a subsection that I could go into, like an unusual security systems. Just start reading my book.
George's book is used to deter Somali pirates. They just have big speakers on the ship and then we just play it.
I feel like that would work better if I had written a purposefully awful kind of porn novel.
Plenty of those out there.
True.
But congratulations. And I would highly recommend it to anybody at the Kremlin who's interested in neo-noir vampires.
There's immortals in there that are my variation of vampires, yes, but they do not sparkle. They do
No sparkles.
Sparkle-free
zone.
Yes. This just introduces a few little nuggets of the supernatural world that definitely gets hugely expanded in the forthcoming sequel.
Seriously, he had a wall with post-it notes at a previous house, and I can tell you there's a lot more content out there. Mm-hmm. If people are brave enough to back it, so look out for it on Kickstarter. I'm sure we'll be sharing a link out on the Fried Brains Facebook page, Twitter account, Google Plus. Is that still a thing? Who knows? We're going to do it anyway.
Why is Google
MySpace,
Plus?
Yep. ICQ, AIM, MSN Messenger, all the things.
Devices.
You can find it. Your carrier pigeon, it'll be out there.
It's true. I could actually save probably a shit ton on shipping if I just had it carrier pigeoned, because I don't think anyone's particularly watching the border for suspicious looking pigeons carrying parcels.
Well, there was a story in the news last week about from Brazil about prisoners using pigeons to carry drugs in and out of prison.
So you gotta love the entrepreneurial thought process for those guys.
Yeah. It's a bit like when I used to volunteer down in St. Kilda on a Friday morning. You'd see the ladies of the night daylighting, if you would, asking people if they were interested in their services at 9:30 in the morning. And I was always kind of impressed in a way, because I'm like, you know what, I respect the entrepreneurial spirit to get out there and hustle for work, even though it's 9:30 in the morning of a work day. I mean,
yeah,
maybe somebody's in the market for your service. I really doubt it. But, you know, good hustle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on from the painful self-promotion that's only going to get worse going forwards, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to lie. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we have been consuming. Now, it's been a bit of a quiet week for both of us because we've got odds and sods going on, but we still managed to watch a couple of bits, and you got yourself a new toy.
I did. It's tax return time here in Australia, so well, it's quite heavy, actually. The Russian bots and the viewers can't see it, but I did get my hands on the latest Oculus Quest VR all-in-one setup.
Nice.
Still in this box. I haven't had a chance to give it a spin yet. Yep. Apparently a game coming, Beta Immortal. That sounds cool. If they can nail what it feels like to be a Jedi in VR, then they're doing quite well.
Yep. There is also, of course, it's Oculus, so that's owned by Facebook. So you will be able to get the true Facebook experience.
I know. I'll be able to sit here and really ignore the world while I browse people's Facebook feeds, which includes a lot of conspiracy theories and fake news. It's an interesting thing. I'm fascinated by VR. I work with it for a little while, very, very briefly. Interestingly, my current role in the educational sector, a different part of a building, I mean, they're actually doing a lot of testing of VR and stuff from an educational perspective. So, while I'm not going to be using it for education, I was noting to you before the show, but there is a new VR application you can download, which allows you to practice firing people. Anybody who actually worked with me at one of my previous jobs at the evil logistics company. Well, a test of it, I don't need any practice firing people because they're quite good at it. it does sound entertaining nonetheless. So I'm keen to give it a try and just see what it's about. I mean, you're a little younger than me, but I remember Lawnmower Man. We've been waiting for the virtual reality for a long time now.
Yep. I actually had an opportunity to try the Virtual Boy. And my God, the idea of 3D has always been fantastic. It's only been the last 2, maybe 3 years that people have started going, oh, we're starting to work out how to actually use it without making you feel like you're going to throw up every organ inside of you.
I think they're still working on that. I think a lot of people still do feel nauseous, at least initially. I think there's a lot of problems that VR has to overcome before it becomes anything like a standard, if you will. The fact that it's very antisocial.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, this is the more expensive model. I was looking at the slightly cheaper model, which only has a one-handed controller.
Okay.
As opposed to this one has two controllers. And sort of selling it, you could watch movies, Netflix and stuff. And like, theoretically, I could load it up with Netflix, take it on the plane when I go to the States in October, and just sit in my seat with that on, sit on the bus or the train and, you know, watch movies that way, you know, like, but that seems like an appallingly bad idea to me. It sounds like a great way to miss your stop. sounds like an even better way to get robbed or attacked. Like, so, hey, I've got a $300 headset on. Could you please come and take it off me? It's a challenge they have to overcome, and that's maybe why Microsoft is backing augmented reality rather than with their HoloLens product, as opposed to, you know, Facebook and everybody else, and PlayStation, Sony, and co. have been working the VR angle for a while. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to seem a little bit weird sitting on your couch with a headset on, right, and not being able to see anything else, but I'm sure I'll get used to it. And I will be able to report back, you know, hopefully next week, on my initial experiences and sort of some of the gaming titles that are available at the moment on
Oculus. One thing that does seem to be nice about VR, certainly at this early stage, is so many of the games seem to come with demos, and that is an area of games that died off for a very long time. But it's slowly coming back a little bit. But I love the idea of, especially with something as immersive as 3D, being able to just have a little bit of a trial with it and just kind of go, okay, yep, that's a game that I would like to invest more time in, because it's such a volatile experience. Some people are generally fine if it's kind of movement-based, point-to-point kind of thing. Or if it's a racing game, they have a much more of a volatile reaction and that sort of stuff. So I think more, not just in VR, it would be lovely if more demos are available just to, you know, get a bit of a sample.
Well, that's it. I mean, back in the day, you get a level or, you know, a certain amount of time to try a game. And I don't think it's an unreasonable way to be, right? To try it for an hour or two and go, do I want to buy this? Do I want to spend $100 on this product? Then, where we've kind of gone to the other extreme now of, please pay full price for my game before it's even finished. Yeah. Let alone playing it.
Yeah.
It's not finished. It will be released before it's finished. And we still expect you to pay for it.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, it's an interesting world. VR, I think Fallout's releasing some of its stuff in VR. I think there's a Skyrim VR. It should be noted that the Oculus Quest does not have access to the full Steam PC library, but the PC version does. So the version you have to plug into your computer does have access to a larger library, I believe, point in time than the wireless version does. But I don't have that much time to game anyway.
Yeah. You're telling me.
But I did get to try it. Moving on to actual things I have tried rather than things that look nice in the box. We talked a little last week about Dead Rising 4. I did finish that on the weekend. Mm-hmm. It was a very disappointing finish.
Oh.
I can see the longer the game went, the worse it got.
Oh.
How little extra content there was, how little challenge there was. Anybody who's played the Dead Rising games, like remember Dead Rising 2, there are maniacs in the game that you've got to take on, or psychopaths, I can't remember what they're called. I think they're maniacs. And they sort of mini bosses, if you will,
okay,
throughout the game. And you beat them, you get their special weapon or whatever. They really can be quite challenging in Dead Rising 2, but in this game, they're pretty lousy. You can choose them pretty easily. You can find a spot where they can't shoot you, but you can shoot them. And so that was kind of lousy. And then the end was just meh. So it was fun. And I think I talked about a lot about I had fun with it last week. It was fun, but it really
kind of felt half-assed.
It felt pretty half-assed. So, and then once the game's over, it's done. There's an extra mode called Capcom Heroes, where you can collect stars and basically unlock costumes of Capcom characters.
Okay.
Great. There are a few in the game as it is, so you can actually change characters to look like characters from Street Fighter and stuff, but that's really kind of like, I'm like, you want to replay the game again so I can unlock costumes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one went away, but I'm back to Game Pass. But I'll be having a go at a new game this week, a Lord of the Rings game, Shadows of War.
That's the sequel, yeah?
Sequel, yeah.
Yeah.
But I did, while I was waiting for that to download, I noticed I hadn't played any of Far Cry 5 for a while. And I just switched it on while I was waiting to download it and found myself getting sucked back in. And if you're interested in Far Cry 5, I don't know if you played it at all. It's a fun game.
Yeah, yeah.
But after about an hour, I'm like, yeah, I remember all these missions. Fine, done this. But I hadn't actually... I actually had a quick look at some of the DLC, which it's actually got a game that actually got DLC released for single player. And there's a couple, and I picked the most highly rated one. And it's actually quite good. I'm trying to remember the name of it now because I just downloaded it, but it's based on the Vietnam War.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that one.
I must have missed the memo because I hadn't noticed it at all. Hours of Darkness.
Yeah,
is the name of the expansion. There's a couple. There's one set on Mars as well, but that one reviewed very badly. So, but this is quite good. So. It really basically reuses the Far Cry 5 engine, and it sets it in the Vietnam War. You're a pilot who's shot down or something, who cares? And basically you got to work your way across the map to get to an extraction point where you can be rescued by your countrymen. And along, as you might imagine along the way, there's a number of different challenges you've got to try and either avoid or kill Vietnamese enemies. You've got to try and rescue some of your fellow pilots who have been down, being held prisoner, South Vietnamese prisoners, take out anti-aircraft guns, that kind of thing. Okay. But and you're probably thinking, yeah, well, I already played X number of hours, 60, 70 hours or whatever, Far Cry 5. The mechanics are somewhat different, and I think what they've done, it makes it more interesting, is they just haven't plonked Far Cry in the jungle, which I know they've done in other Far Cry games. They haven't plonked Far Cry 5 in the jungle and put Vietnam War skin on it. They have actually really changed a little bit the balance of the game, and they've really stronger emphasis on stealth in this game. You can't carry that many different kinds of weapons. You can basically carry a pistol and a long arm, so either an M16, a shotgun, a submachine gun, something like that, and a bow and arrow. Mm-hmm. So you've got a much smaller selection of weapons than you would in the main Far Cry 5 game, and you take hits a lot harder, right? Like in Far Cry 5, you get hit pretty hard and still survive.
Mm-hmm.
This one, two or three hits and you're in trouble.
Okay.
There's also a set of perks you get. So that basically means you move faster when crouched, you're quieter, predators don't attack you quite as hard. But there are four of them, and for each stealth kill you get, you unlock one of those perks. But as soon as you're detected, you lose all of them.
So you
put something on the line here, rather than just being stealthy for stealthy's sake, there is actual value within the game to remaining undetected, because you've got to get started at the bottom. And again, it's only four extra kills, but you notice it straight away, but you're more easily noticed if you lose your perks. You move so much slower while crouched if you lose your perks. So you actually do have a genuine desire to keep those perks and not lose them. So it's quite annoying when you actually get detected. So I'm having fun with it. I mean, you can go stealthy in Far Cry 5 if you want to. There's very little reason to. There's no incentive to, unless you actually want to play that way. Yeah. At least as far as I can remember, I don't remember there being any great incentive to stealth kill. Like, played through the whole thing and finished it quite easily without having to do it.
Yeah.
I guess you can try and do it to make it harder for yourself, but yeah, there's none of that. Is this perk system really gives you an incentive to want to use that stealth, aside from the fact that you just can't last as long without it. So
yeah,
it's fun. I can't say the story is particularly involving, but it does. It's an interesting tactic to go. The map isn't very big. The way the level is designed, it makes you sort of wind through valleys. So, you know, you're not going in a straight line. You're going in a big curvy line to get to the end, which makes it last longer. You have to go a lot slower because you're constantly on the lookout for enemy soldiers. You don't want to get seen. It's all a very, the cynic in me could go, it's a way of making the maximum amount of game for the minimum amount of effort. But at the same time, it cost me $12. You know, I'm probably got 5 or 6 hours in. I would suggest probably that in it left to go. Maybe more if you want to be a completionist, and I don't. So, if anybody's in the mood to go back to Far Cry 5, and I severely doubt they are, because they released that glorified expansion pack a couple of months ago. I forget the name of it. But, I would say, if you're a bit like me and you're sitting around going, there's nothing in the market now, but I really want to play into Borderlands, now's the time to check back in with some of those games that, you know, you might have had a look at a few months ago and gone, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Check back in and have a look at Far Cry 5 again. And you know, maybe check out some of the expansion packs, and in particular the Vietnam one, Hours of Darkness. I remember the name eventually. Hours of Darkness is worth checking out.
Cool. With those ones, the different kind of skins and styles that they play with those expansions, do you think that they're kind of toying with, playing with, expanding the Far Cry thing? Because I know a couple of years ago they came out with Far Cry Primal, which was essentially a primitive reskin of Far Cry 4, I think it was. Would you be interested in something that kind of breaks away from the classic Far Cry kind of game mechanic?
Here's the thing. Far Cry 5 was the first Far Cry game I've ever played.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I had Far Cry 2, and I might have played an hour or so of it and not really dug it. Because true story, I got my titles mixed up, and I thought I was buying Just Cause 2, which is the game I really wanted to get. And I came in with Far Cry 2 because I had a complete brain fart at the shop, and I got them mixed up. And then it wasn't the game I thought it was. And I went, you know what it's like when you're expecting one thing and you get the other thing? Doesn't matter how good the thing is you get, you know? You just like, oh, I wanted the over sand pit blowing things up. So I've never really played a Far Cry game before. So I had no expectation. I have zero expectations of what Far Cry game should be. It can be whatever it wants. I really just like this. I looked at the setting of Far Cry 5 in that sort of being set within the United States and, you know, that sort of, I don't know what you call it, Trumpian.
Culty.
The cult angle was interesting. The politics of the game was interesting. The trailer looked good, and that's why I gave it a go. They can take the franchise. I'm not the person who asked who's going to get precious about what this franchise should and shouldn't do.
Fair
enough. I'm the person who gets precious about what the failed Fallout franchise should and shouldn't do.
Well, we all know your thoughts on the current Fallout product, shall we say?
Well, I haven't actually played it, but I do have it.
Oh, you do?
It came for free with the PlayStation.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know whether I would ever play a Bethesda game on a PlayStation, just because everything that I hear, it always seems to be the worst platform to play it on for bugs and glitches.
Well, I think you could probably back that statement up now. I don't know if I would ever play a Bethesda product. What's up?
That's being a wee bit cruel, because, come on, you would...
Okay, Doom Eternal, apart from Doom Eternal.
Doom Eternal, thank you.
And come on, seriously, they're right now, they're on a winning streak. Fallout 76, complete fucking turd. Rage 2, while I've heard it's not a complete turd, was pretty disappointing, the final product. And now they've released Wolfenstein Youngblood, and they've completely screwed the pooch again on that one, apparently. So they are on a losing streak.
Wolfenstein 2 was very, very, very good, though. So
Wolfenstein games to that point were good, yes. But they've now released three duds in a row.
Yeah. Oh, well. They've got Elder Scrolls 6 eventually coming out.
Exactly.
When that comes out, you'll jump on that.
I'll try it. I mean, that said, I was expecting to jump on Fallout 76. If the early reviews say Elder Scrolls 6 is full of, hey, you know, buy fucking gold bars and let's introduce a battle royale mode, maybe it won't.
Mm-hmm. I see that, and your reaction to Elder Scrolls 6 being like that, just as much as I see your reaction to the last Tarantino movie is coming out and it's not getting good reviews. You'll go and see that shit.
There's a different... I'm sure it's apples and apples in here. Let's say Tarantino had produced three films of a quality of, say, the last three Transformers films. And the next one's like, oh, it's a Transformers film, but it's completely different this time. We've completely changed it. You're going to love it. It's great. I've got the best Transformers. You know, if that was the kind of film, if that was the situation we were in, if the last three things he put his name to were absolute shite, but not only were bad, but all pretty much betrayed everybody who had ever spent money on his products up to that point in time, then I feel like I would have a very different expectation about whether to go and see, you know, the next one, if you will. I didn't like Hateful Eight that much, but it was for what it was. Like, it was still classic Tarantino material. So he hasn't kind of shown the kind of disrespect to his audience that I think Bethesda have.
Fair enough.
So, you're right. It would be a big call not to play it. But if it had the kind of reaction that Fallout 76 had had, let's say, and they made a game that was so against what their players actually wanted, like they did with Fallout 76, I think I would think twice.
Yeah.
I should note, I'm so sure they're not going to make that mistake. I mean, Fallout, for all its popularity, I don't think it's held in quite the regard that the Elder Scrolls franchise is. Like, you can fucking with Fallout was one thing. If fuck up the Elder Scrolls series, then they've really gone too far.
Just everyone that I know that is a Fallout fan, they usually kind of say, oh, the best Fallout is New Vegas. Which wasn't even by Bethesda. That was by Obsidian. And so it's like, okay. So it was the best Fallout wasn't made by Bethesda. Then it was Fallout 3, kind of closely followed by Fallout 4. All right, okay. And the people that made Fallout New Vegas went on and did their own... Pillars of Eternity RPG, which I've started playing on the Switch, and it's fucking awesome. They are now doing one that's coming out, something like Outer World or something like that.
That's right. It's going to be an Epic Games exclusive on PC.
But that's getting a lot of positive buzz early on, and it looks fun.
I'm that weird person that I didn't play Fallout 1 or 2. I started with Fallout 3. And I thought New Vegas was good. I played it on console, and there were some things I think maybe PC players had a better experience than me. I don't remember playing it and going, oh my God, this is so much better than Fallout 3, like a lot of people say now. I liked it probably as much as Fallout 3. Fallout 4 felt a lot like, yeah, it's good, but it's really just more of the same. Now I would like something different. And now I'm going to say, yes, they did give us something different next, but it was the wrong something different.
Yeah, that was like, oh, the game system that everyone likes. Yeah, we just kind of stuck too close to the similar kind of story and development of that story. Not, let's completely change what kind of a game this is.
Yeah, it's a little bit like if Nintendo had gone, well, the Wii's really, really, really popular, but we don't want to, you know, like if a Wii U comes out and I go, yeah, maybe we strayed a little bit too, you know, we just kind of did the same thing again, but bigger. Maybe this time if we incorporated it into an exercise bike, you know, or completely random like that they had, like, you know, the fans, they like the portable aspect of a Wii U. They just don't like these other stuff, you know, and you go, yeah, I don't think I really want to listen to them about that. Let's just go make Nintendo Minis now instead or something. But, you know, Nintendo is a company who just specializes in I think what makes them special is they're a mixture of A, listening to their audience, but also predicting where their audience wants to go next. Instead of that Jobsian thing, that Steve Jobsian thing at Apple used to be able to do is go, if he could sort of sniff where the audience wanted to go or his customers wanted to go before they even really knew.
Yeah.
But I tell you, I found my copy of Zelda. So it's staring me now in a box. So I know exactly where it is for my trip in October.
I feel like you're going to just keep this can kicking going on until at some point you're going to come on this podcast and go, yeah, I started playing Zelda on the Switch in VR. It's a Switch simulator where you can play Switch games in VR.
Probably someone who's done it already, but I did think about taking the VR thing on the plane, but I think that might be a step too far.
I think that's a step too far because you'd have to lug that shit around with you as well.
Exactly. It's actually quite heavy.
Yeah.
So I'm sure my tablet, my phone, and the Switch will do me.
I think you're fine.
Plus, it's Qantas, right? I'm not going to be tied to a wing. So they do have an in-flight entertainment system.
There you go. You're going to be fine. Anything else you want to talk about?
Two quick things. One, we have this last week on Netflix, we had season 3 of Glow.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've actually got around to watching it, and Shay. I would recommend it. It would get a thumbs up on the Shay scale. There are no monsters or beheadings. So for those who are unfamiliar with Glow, Glow is a TV show. I look at the personal and professional lives of a group of women who perform for a wrestling organization in Los Angeles in the 1980s. That is rather inaccurate.
Ladies of Wrestling?
Sorry?
Glow, it stands for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling or something?
Correct. It is based on an actual historical promotion. There was a real Glow. And it did stand for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And it basically started out as a couple of guys who hired some actresses to learn how to be wrestlers to make a TV show. So kind of the other way around, rather than hiring wrestlers and then making a TV show. It's like it sort of made a TV show and then turned them into wrestlers. And the show nominally is about wrestling in the sense that, you know, it's about them learning how to wrestle. It's about them overcoming the challenges of being people who aren't professional wrestlers and learning how to be one. But it's not about wrestling. It's really about these characters, and it's an ensemble cast of women. Actress Alison Brie plays Ruth. You're probably the most famous person on the show. She was on Community for a long time. Betty Gilpin is also a prominent character. She plays Debbie. Betty Gilpin, probably not someone you would actually necessarily know from anything else, other than to say that she is in a film called The Hunt, I believe, which this week got canned.
Oh, by, that's right. Yeah.
Release date got basically it's gone on the shelf because it was felt it was a little bit too close to the bone with some of those mass shootings in the States.
Mm.
It's a shame because I was looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think she's someone you'll see more of because she's very good. Mm. But the show, as I sort of said, it's the wrestling is just on the surface. What really it is, it's a Trojan horse to get you into the lives of these women and their relationships. So Ruth and Debbie start out as friends. Ruth sleeps with Debbie's husband. They have a falling out, yet somehow end up working together on this wrestling promotion together. And wouldn't you know it, their matches turn out to be, their rivalry turns out to be the most charismatic and interesting. Hence, they have to end up working together quite a bit. That consumes a great deal of season one and two. Kind of resolved towards the end of season two, largely. And at the end of season two, their TV show in LA was cancelled.
Okay.
And they were like, yeah, what do we do? Oh, oops, they get an offer to go work in Las Vegas. So season three is about them establishing their presence in Las Vegas and some of the continuation of, I guess, the character stories from the previous season and, you know, moving in new directions and such.
Okay.
So, look, I really, really enjoyed the first two seasons of this. The season three started really nicely. I was really—I didn't even know it was dropping, so it was a nice surprise to log into Netflix and find something I actually wanted to watch for a change. If it's good family viewing, really, I mean, there's nothing too disgusting in here. I mean, there's some sexual references, drug taking, I guess, but I don't know if you're good doing a good job selling it for families. I think it's good telly. It's great storytelling. The other name in it you would probably recognize is Mark Maron, or Mark Morone. Mm-hmm. He has a very popular podcast. He's in stuff.
Okay.
You'd recognize the voice, you'll recognize the face. He was in a Sharknado movie.
I recognize his face.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's been in stuff. But he's great. He is really good in this show. I was really pleased and that I was enjoying watching the season continue. Onto another medium this week, just passed. We saw the release and I asked you to listen to it, but I bet you didn't get around to it.
I started listening to it.
Oh, that's the start. Is the new Slipknot record. We Are Not Your Kind. I keep getting it confused because there was a garbage record a couple of years ago called Not Your Kind of People. This is very similar. We Are Not Your Kind.
Yeah.
By Slipknot. And I've been listening to this pretty much on repeat since the start of a week. It's really good. This is probably other than Iowa, which we listened to the podcast a couple of months ago. This is probably the first Slipknot record I've listened to this extensively. It never really grabbed me back in the day. I've never been a big Slipknot fan.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be probably seeing them twice in October. So I thought I should maybe check out some of their stuff so I have a chance to. I feel like if you know a band's work, you're much more likely to enjoy their live show. And if you're still listening to a band live, is a great way to discover their music. So this is a great record. I'm going to sound like a complete fool because I don't know their back catalog so extensively, but there's experiment with some electronic stuff in here. Like the first track is kind of a little bit, there's quite a bit of electronic sound going on. It wouldn't be your classic, screeching sort of metal start to an album. There's a single off the album which is called Unsainted, is probably not your classic metal Slipknot-y material. It's sort of more straight ahead rock, but I really, really enjoy it all the same. And the rest of the album, honestly, the kind of a vibe I get off most of it is new metal, which is unusual because there aren't many bands making new metal anymore. And bands that are making new metal, you feel like you listen to Korn records or anything in the last 10 years from Limp Bizkit, and you're like, I used to really like this once upon a time.
Yeah.
What the fuck was I thinking?
Apple Music got together with the Slipknot percussionist Clown to talk a little bit about intro bit. It's like as aggressive and intense as Slipknot looks and sounds, their approach to creating music is as tender and nurturing as a doe's love for her fawn.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, for their sixth studio album, We Are Not Your Kind, the Iowans took their time for 4 years working on their communication and brotherhood. Most of all, they responded with force to a world in crisis. There you go.
Well, I mean, interestingly, it's like, if you've ever seen Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary.
Oh, yes. Well, half of it.
Interesting, that's kind of their angle as well. Like, they kind of end up going to therapy together to stay together as a band. It's an interesting thing to see metal bands getting like really up close to personal with their feelings.
So you don't get to talk until you have the stick.
Pretty much. Like, when you say shit like that, kind of makes me nervous. I just remember there was a scene where they got a professional coach guy in to help them making their album. It was documented in that movie.
Yeah.
And at one point, he put a bunch of posters around the studio, as I recall, said, get into the zone or something like that. Oh, well, like they printed out posters on the wall and on speakers and stuff saying, get into the zone. I don't remember which one it was, like Lars or James got really angry and mad at him for doing it, like invading their space. And they had like a big powwow therapy session to talk about how it made him feel when he saw those posters or something. And you're like,
It made me feel like you didn't appreciate my own efforts.
Yeah, like, I mean, the humans are allowed to have feelings, I guess, and, you know, it didn't make a great record in the end, but it's a great film if you haven't seen it, people. Some Kind of Monster is one of the great rock and roll documentaries. But if you like a bit of rock and roll, a bit of metal, do check out the new Slipknot record. It's very good. And the thing I'll say, if you're in the mood for something loud or something rocky, the new Tool single, he's been up, I think, for about the last week now.
That's
on Spotify, Apple Music, I imagine. I imagine you'll find it on the YouTubes and whatever kind of music.
All of them digital platforms.
Whatever music streaming service you're using. It's called Fear Inoculum. Goes for about 10 minutes in a classic Tool style. If you like Tool, I think you'll really like it because it just reeks of their... Rick's Tool. It screams Tool. I really enjoy Tool, so it works for me. If you're not a fan, then maybe give it a miss.
Yeah, I listened to Fear Inoculum as well, and this was really my first true experience with Tool. And they deal with some interesting concepts. There's a lot of thinking going on behind some of their songs.
And a lot of their earlier stuff deals with things like Nietzsche and philosophy and that kind of thing. A lot of their earlier work was about some of Maynard's experiences when he was sexually abused as a child. And there's a whole swathe of songs on an Anima, which are based on Bill Hicks comedy bits.
Yeah, so it's really a black hole, rabbit hole that you can just go down and you will find yourself in some weird places. It's definitely not the sort that I would advise kind of going, like what I did, of going, Tool Essentials, that'll do, boom, and then just jump up.
I think you need to just choose an album and kind of
listen from start to finish.
Well, that's kind of why I think they've resisted putting their stuff up on streaming services all this while, is that they're an album band. They make an album to be played and listened to a certain way, in a certain order, as a complete piece of art.
Yeah.
And you know, just listening to the singles doesn't really work in that world. But I mean, I've said it before, but I feel sorry for children and young people today growing up in a world where the album is a dying art form.
That's true.
People don't make albums like that very often anymore, because it's all about getting a single which will get played on radio and people can watch YouTube and
this one's had 722 million views in 2 days.
but I think they're going to miss the if an event. I mean, maybe someone, any of the Russian bots who are listening who are under 21, feel free to listen, get in touch and tell me I'm wrong. But I don't know that they're listening to an album the way I would have listened to Tool albums in the past, or in my parents would listen to Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, you know. The way I always tell people is that a record used to cost me $25 to $30 album for the album. And that was a lot of money. So if you probably paid $25 for that record, you were in a relationship with that record and you were going to give it a red hot fucking go until you found out a way to enjoy it. Because you know what? You couldn't just take it back.
No. And I wonder if part of it was also because we were the last generation to deal with the terror, the abject fear of what if my cassette tape gets chewed up. So you didn't really take that.
My CD gets scratched.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea of just like, oh, I don't like that one, skip to the next one. It's so much easier now. Whereas we had to go on this journey with them because you had to, there wasn't that nice, easy fast forward. And it just takes you to the start of the next track, not until right near the end of cassette tapes. And CDs, you had to take it out and put it back in. So if you didn't want to listen to a whole album, you had to have that big file of facts of CDs there, and you had to thumb through them all to find the different one. It wasn't as easy to change tracks. So I wonder if that has a little bit something to do with it as well.
Oh, it's a different world. It's a different world of enjoying music. And look, I mean, in a way, you get pros and cons. Like, I always tell the story, but if I wanted to hear, you sort of heard half a song on the radio, you probably didn't know what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you wanted to go, you did know what it was called, and you wanted to go listen to it and see if you wanted to buy it, you had to go to the record shop and ask them to put it on for you and stand there with headphones like a douchebag in the store, listen to it for 5 minutes going, well, I've gone to all the trouble of making him play it. I guess I'm going to have to buy it now.
just guilt purchase.
So, like, you know, you're exposed to so much more material. Any song I mentioned, if I said, hey, I reckon it's this band you really like, you can straight away, you can jump onto Apple Music or YouTube and find out whether I'm right or wrong. Back in the old days, that was really hard. So there's the upside there. But the downside is, I think it's hard to find the good stuff, but you got to find it. You're sort of through so much stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of concept albums, I listened to a classic this week. Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell, Back into Hell.
Did you lose a bet or something?
No, I'm just a fan of Meatloaf.
Said nobody ever.
Shut the fuck up. He could belt out a tune. And he was dealing with interesting, nowhere near as heady things as Tool and going into Nietzsche and things like that.
He was took the words right out of my mouth and
fire.
I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that.
Yeah. I mean, we've all been there. We've all been there. You just got to open your heart a little bit, man. Open it up. But it was fun going back to that because the songs, I still know all the words and they're still fun, but just the sound of it and the synthesizer and things like that, it sounds so dated. And the kind of the grandioseness of these ridiculous songs just seems comical. And it's certainly not a test of time. And I found out that there's actually a part 3 to the Bat Out of Hell saga. It came out like 2011 or something like that.
Like, wow. Nothing like beating a dead horse.
Yeah. And I tried listening to it and it's like, that's just wrong. It's not got the nostalgia facts to get me through the album. It's not got the interesting new sound. It's weird. It's very bizarre. Music tastes change. Somehow, I still have an open appreciation for Meatloaf.
I think I've said enough about music tonight. Is there anything you'd like to talk about after confessing? This is the man, by the way, Russian Bots. who have been to two of the three concerts he's been to were Nickelback. So take that with a grain of salt.
Well, look, I really enjoyed the opening act of Manic Street Preachers. They were fucking awesome. And I realized that I have actually seen The Killers live as well. And I can't remember who the other opening band was for Nickelback, but they were kind of good too. So, you know, I've seen, what, out of three live gigs, I have seen one, two, three, four. Four bands.
Woo!
And so putting that into context, three of those bands versus two of the same one. So I'm ahead.
50% of whom were Nickelback.
But hey, I'm gonna go back and listen all the way through Nickelback just to spite you.
I'm sure Chad Kroeger will thank you from his mansion.
Yeah. I gotta love the Canadians, gotta respect them.
Maybe you'll hang in for a bit of Avril Lavigne afterwards just to keep the family happy.
Hey.
She's married to skater boy.
I was a skater boy. No, I wasn't.
I was going to say, I've seen photos of you. You were Genesis walking. That's it.
Yeah, I was.
When you were Genesis walk.
I had that interesting look then, doing the Genesis walk out in public with my friends, wearing a full long black leather coat, a cowboy hat, and Fila trainers.
This has got to be at least 15 years after that song, too.
Shut up. Sometimes you just got to be in the mood, man. Now, on to other things. And actually, interestingly, talking about kind of adjusting to modern life, I watched the Netflix special of Rocco's Modern Life, Static Cling. First time that Rocco's Modern Life has come back to your screens since the 90s. And it does not skip a beat at all. The animation, the way that they tell their jokes, the way that everything is. It is entirely a perfect continuation of Rocco's Modern Life. Now, I was not really a fan of Rocco's Modern Life when it was first out. And so this was weird to watch for me. It's a 45-minute animation, basically going through unusual scenario after unusual scenario of Rocco the wallaby trying to get used to modern life after being him, Heifer, and Filbert. Somehow their house got blasted off into space at the end of their TV show, and that's where they've been floating around, and they've had just the limited amount of food and drink and just one videotape of the Big Heads, which is like a comedy show that they were big fans of. And it's weird. I can't really talk much about it, 'cause like I say, I wasn't a Rocco's Modern Life fan to begin with, but if you were, you're probably gonna like this. And whether or not it stems the continuation of Rocco as a TV show or a Netflix show or something like that, maybe, but I don't know. Its style is very different to what is being produced nowadays for that age group. It's very, very unusual. So maybe it'll stand out because it's unusual, but I don't know. I don't know if it'll pick up and continue on, or if it'll just be, all right, well, it's a show called Rocco's Modern Life that is for this very select group of people who grew up with it, and it's just going to grow up with them. They're now in their 30s. Okay, let's carry on aiming it directly at this 30-year-old market, and that's it. Be interesting to see, though. But it's kind of the first of a double bill of returning old TV stars, because in 2 days or 3 days, Invader Zim is coming as well. And we have got that coming to Netflix as well. And I was a huge Invader Zim fan, loved it. And I am looking forward to seeing what comes from this Netflix special.
If my friends liked it too, I'm just not sure I really understood it.
Yeah, it's going to be called Enter the Florpus. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes from there. I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with Invader Zim for a while. There was, I think it's still up, a website called roomwithamoose.com, and you could actually download the audio recordings of script read-throughs by the cast for episodes that weren't aired. And some of them are bloody brilliant and utterly insane. And mind you, this is Jonah Vasquez, who, you know, he did Johnny the Homicidal Maniac comic books, which are really cool. Thanks to my brother for getting me onto that.
And we are six days away from
six days.
Season.
Okay.
Rick and Morty.
Oh, shit. Yeah. That's right. Mind you, they're not, they're returning, but they've not had a decade or more off the screens. Whether or not they'll be able to come back with the same impressive nature that they had before, who knows? Time will tell. But
we said that at the end of season two as well. Like, I couldn't possibly top that. But you had people jumping on the counter at McDonald's, screaming for
Szechuan sauce. And Travis is already slipping into the Oculus Rift world.
Just checking it out.
What else? Oh, the other thing that I watched was a new Netflix show called Wu Assassins. Now, this is an interesting show because I don't think it's based off of anything. But it stars one of the guys who was from The Raid and Raid 2.
Is he one of those guys that was in Star Wars as well?
No. No, you're thinking of...
A couple of those guys got a five-minute cameo, right?
Yeah, you're thinking of Donnie Yen. It's Iko Uwais,
I'm thinking of The Force Awakens, is that scene where in the Millennium Falcon when they get the Han Solo is in the ship and they confront those guys. They go, oh, you stole them.
Maybe.
The monsters or whatever. Those two guys in the ship who they wasted for 5 minutes is...
You're absolutely right. Yes. That's the guy. And it's a really interesting idea. It's set in San Francisco. Tangentially associated with the triads because Kai, the main hero, the Wu assassin, he is the adopted son of the triad gang in the area called Uncle Six. And the Wu assassin is imbued with the power of 1,000 monks to rid the world of Wuxing, which there's essentially elemental beings or people that can possess the elemental abilities of them, like fire, earth, water, nature, metal, those kinds of things.
It's not Avatar The Last Airbender here, is it? Or?
No. But there's a lot of similarities between this and Iron Fist. The difference is this one tries to actually be a bit better. And the action sequences are fantastic. The fight sequences are really cool. And I wish they had kind of gone a little bit more tongue-in-cheek with it. Because there are some parts where you're watching through an episode and you suddenly go, you know what, they haven't had a fight scene in a while, and then suddenly they're having a fight because a waitress was rude to them at the table, and some of those are like, oh, come on, play that for laughs and that would be even better. It would be almost to the point of in the original Incredible Hulk TV show where Bill Bixby is in the back of the taxi and he gets road rage and hulks out because of that. It's that kind of level of, all right, we need to see the Incredible Hulk this episode, but we haven't quite worked out how to do it. Let's get him road rage. And it's the same thing here. So like, okay, we've got these martial arts specialists. They're not great actors, but they really know how to sell these fight sequences. They haven't had one in a little while. Yeah, street fight because someone was doing this. Let's do that. That'll do. That'll work. And it's absurd. But the, like I say, the action is so much better and more believable than in Iron Fist. The special effects, not great, very clearly done on a budget, but still better than Iron Fist, in my opinion.
Is it American?
Huh?
Is it American?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting and just, it's a bit of a change of pace. There's a bit more brevity to it than the standard action TV shows that all over Netflix and like Arrow and things like that, where they take it all so seriously. There's a little bit of fun to this, but the fight sequences are seriously considered and they are very good. They look like powerful punches and kicks and falls and things like that. So you kind of, you can't help but kind of feel like, damn, that, ooh, that hurt. Which I never once felt when, Finn Jones was punching someone in Iron Fist, you know. They're like, aw, he gave him a love tap. But that is all that I've been watching at the moment. I've started rewatching the manga, the anime for Ushio and Tora, which it's not the best manga in any anime in any way, shape, or form. It's just kind of, yeah, stock standard demon hunter show where he gets his odd buddy, the odd couple, where he, Ushio, gets this demon, the beast spear, which can rid the world of yokai, which are spirits, and he has an unusual antagonistic relationship with Tora, who's another yokai that he should really kill. But they kind of help each other out. And it's a fun relationship that Ushio and Tora have. It's something that you can just put on in the background and kind of go, yep, okay, that's fun. Whenever you look up at the screen, something fun's going on.
That's what you want.
Yeah. It's what I need right now.
I know, well, everyone needs it now and then. I mean, it's kind of why I went back to Far Cry 5. It's like, can I really be bothered learning a new game right now? Probably not.
I have started playing a new game as well. Sorry. I mentioned it before. Pillars of Eternity. It's now available on Switch, and it is your classic RPG. Old school Baldur's Gate kind of level shit. And it's fucking brilliant. I only downloaded it 24 hours ago, and I think I've put 7 hours or 8 hours into it so far, and the story's only just started to get good. I have.
What kind of game are we talking to? A hack and slash then?
Not really hack and slash, because as soon as you enter combat, the system pauses so that you can set up what you want each of your characters to do, if you're going to move them around a flank, things like that.
Maybe a bit like play. XCOM?
Huh?
Bit like XCOM then?
Little bit. But it's kind of the closest, I think, that you're ever going to get to more of your traditional tabletop RPG playing in a game, where you can give yourself a few moments to consider what you're going to do. You can look at your items safely, then you unpause it, and then the action goes. And you can pause at any time to set up new bits and pieces. What's really good about it, I haven't got far enough into it to really be experiencing it, but it's been out on PC and Xbox and PlayStation for a while. is how your choices have genuine weight in the world. And even just on side missions that you could just find yourself wandering down, it'll have much bigger ramifications on the world at large around you. And it's a great consequence game.